وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Just like an individual, a person has two aspects in his nature. One is his fitrat that Allah speaks about in the Quran and says, Fitrat Allah allati fatara an-nasa alayha. This fitrat is an aspect of his nature. And so also does he have tabi'at. Tabi'at is also his nature. Just like an individual has these two aspects, so does a society. A society has fitrat, and a society has tabi'at. Fitrat is that inclination that a person has in himself that drives him towards fulfilling his objective and goal. It's those inclinations that are in us that push us to fulfill our goals, the purpose of our creation. It pushes us towards that. And tabi'at are those inclinations that push us to fulfill our desires, our needs, things that we want and wish for, things even those that we need. So when we look at fitrat, it is that inclination that whatever purpose of our existence is, it is pushing us towards that. And tabi'at is that inclination that pushes us towards our needs and desires. So for example, when we look at hunger and fulfilling hunger, you see, hunger is a need, it's not a desire, it is a want. And so this hunger, which is our need, which we see that we have to fulfill it, if not we die, this hunger, we can say it's natural, and it is natural for us to be hungry or thirsty. And this requirement of food and drink to fulfill that is also a need. It's not a desire. But is this need and is this nature of ours something that is in line with our purpose? For example, us being hungry and requiring food, is this something that is achieving or is helping us to achieve the purpose of our existence? You see that this is nature, this is an instinct, but it is not an instinct or nature that is inclining us to fulfill our objective. Our purpose is something else, even though this is a need. So people, there are those people who build or who follow their tabi'at and make the requirements of their tabi'at an emphasis in their life, and they fulfill them. And then there are those who see the importance of the fitrat and follow the path of fitrat and fulfill that. Now when we look at tabi'at, we see the outcome of tabi'at, meaning trying to fulfill our needs and desires and wishes. The outcome of that is culture. What is culture? It is the outcome of our tabi'at, of us fulfilling our tabi'at. There are needs also, and to fulfill that need, we see that there is a way of life, a culture that we make. And we make this culture in order to fulfill those needs that are our tabi'at, not our fitrat. Now, there are those who give emphasis to the fitrat, and instead of trying to give emphasis to those things that fulfill the desire or the inclination of tabi'at, they go towards fulfilling the desires of fitrat. So when we look at societies, you can look at their growth either in terms of fitrat or in terms of tabi'at. There are those societies that have advanced and progressed in fulfilling their tabi'at, but they have ignored their fitrat. And then there are those societies that have advanced in their fitrat, but have ignored, you know, that are have ignored their tabi'at. Like, for example, if you go to a people and a society and you see in them that they have fulfilled the requirements of tabi'at, that they have a strong culture, they have a strong way of life, to fulfill the requirements, the natural requirements of their tabi'at, you see that such a society will be advanced, will be progressive in trying to fulfill this natural need. And hence you will see them having big buildings, organized system. Everything is running in an organized way. When you look at that, this is the fulfillment of tabi'at. This is the fulfillment of tabi'at. It's not the advancement of fitrat. And having the fulfillment of these things, meaning having big buildings, having an organized system, having all of these things to organize and to make our tabi'at and the instincts that we have, fulfilling them doesn't mean that those people have advanced in their fitrat. This is the reason why we see that in the world today, when we look at it, we see that the buildings have become big, but the people who live in them have become small. And in the past, we see that the buildings or the houses that people used to live in were small, but the people were big. And we need to see which aspect is that which makes us successful. Does a person who become big become successful, or does a person who makes his house bigger successful? Who is it that is truly succeeding, truly achieving? But when we look at fitrat, we see that fitrat is that which makes us bigger, a person bigger. Let me explain that if you send a salawat, please. Life of any person and life of any nation comes when they advance in their fitrat, when they go after those inclinations and give emphasis to those inclinations that take them closer to the purpose that they have been made for. Why have you been made? Why have you been created? Is this taking me towards that goal? Or is it not taking me towards that goal? If it is taking me towards that goal, this inclination, then this is called fitrat. And when a nation has advanced in fitrat, the first quality that it has, my friends, the first quality that a people have who have advanced in their fitrat is that they become alive, that their conscience becomes alive. People who advanced in their tabi'at but don't advance in their fitrat, this is a society whose conscience is dead. Whose conscience is dead. Their zamir is not alive. And such a nation, they will see all the wrong that is happening in terms of their objective and higher purpose. They will see that, but they do not have it in them to rectify it because their conscience is dead. And this happens when a people do not advance in their fitrat. And this is when we look at the fitrat of a nation and we see the nation, if that nation truly has given emphasis to the purpose of its creation, of why they are created, then those people, that nation and that community, you will see, is a community that is alive, whose conscience is alive, and who recognize truth and stand with it. And those people whose conscience is dead, you cannot expect them to stand up. Now when we look at this reality, and when we see the people in the era of Imam Hussein, Salawat alhamdulillah. We see different types of people, different types of individuals, groups. You had a group of people who were rulers. Rulers like Muawiyah and those type of people who had power in their hand, who had authority. They made decisions for others. These were the rulers. In that time, you had the people of Sham. Look at the people of Sham, and they had their own mentality. They had their own teachings. And you know that the people of Sham became Muslim, and they accepted Islam wholeheartedly. Not that, you know, they were like afraid of Islam and they accepted it by force. No, they accepted it wholeheartedly. But the Islam that they were taught, right, their marja was Muawiyah. You know, they used to read his Tawziul Masail. They used to learn Islam from him. He used to teach them what's wajib and what's not, what they must do and what they shouldn't do, or whatever the principles that they learned. They didn't learn it from Ahlul Bayt. They had no connection with them. They learned it from Muawiyah. They learned it from his clan, Bani Umayyah. So obviously this is a whole group of people, a nation of people that was living there, that we see that Imam Hussein and in turn Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam had to deal with. Salawat alayhi. And then you had the people of Kufa. You see, the people of Kufa are different than the people of Sham. Now the people of Kufa, they learned from Imam Ali. Imam Ali was the leader in Kufa. They heard him speak. They used to pray behind him. They used to be sitting in his speeches. They used to be listening to his advice and his sermons. They would be learning from the principles, not just in his word, but his actions also. Imam Ali's actions were known to everyone. What he used to do, his generosity, his love that he had for people, and how much he served people, and especially those who are oppressed, especially those who are poor. And in his death, when he was dying, it became clear how many people did Imam Ali reach out to and was affecting their lives. And no one knew about it. Orphans were lined out outside his house. Orphans who brought milk for him, because they heard that if he drinks milk, he will be good. So they brought milk so that they can give it to him. Imagine this. Now, this is an outcome, this love of these poor and these orphans was an outcome of Imam Ali's interaction with them and his dealing with them. So it shows that Imam Ali had an effect on the people of Kufa. In fact, the orphans that Imam Ali helped, the poor that the Imam Ali reached out to, these were the same people who were adults at the time of Ashura. Imagine this. These were the adults. These were the youngsters. Didn't they in their own life know how Imam Ali reached out to them and how much of a caring hand he had in their lives? How much he influenced them and affected them? You see, 22, 23 years later when Ashura happened, these were the adults. These were the people in Kufa. So these people of Kufa were people who actually were influenced by the teachings of Ahlul Bayt. They learned Islam from Imam Ali. Where can you find a better source of Islam and teaching Islam than Imam Ali? Really, if there's anyone who can do justice to the member, there cannot be anyone who can compare himself to Imam Ali. Imagine this. And these people were in his masjid. Subhanallah. And this was a whole group, a nation of people now. You had the people of Kufa. Then you had those people in that time who were non-aligned. They didn't choose any side, not Kufa, not Sham. We are not involved in politics. And this was a whole nation, a group of people that was just non-aligned. They didn't want to be in line with anyone. This is another group of people that you see Imam in his era had to deal with. That was also there. And then of course you had the opportunists. And that is existing in every time. Opportunists are those people that who run after wherever they can find something better. They can share power, they can share wealth. Wherever they can get more, they are running after it to get it there. These were opportunists. And this was a whole group of people that Imam had to deal with. So now, my friends, like I said before, right? All these people are there, and these groups of people are there. You have the rulers, Yazid. Now, Imam Hussein, really, what he brought forward was, again, what he wanted to achieve, and he did, was to bring that group forward that was responsible. That was responsible for all of these tyrants. Like I said, you know, and I don't want to go into it because I explained this before. Imam Hussein wanted to expose a group of people that were not exposed, that were always respected and always honored. And it is because of these respected people that whatever tyrant came into power, based on them they came into power. Based on them they came into power. And this is a group that was like a sore eye to Imam Ali, that Imam Ali could not deal with them. He didn't have the opportunity. Imam Hassan didn't have the circumstance to bring them out and expose them. It was Imam Hussein who had the chance, and he did it, and he wanted to do this. Why? Because as long as that group goes on without being pointed out to, without being brought out and exposed, that group will always cause problems in Islam and in the human beings across wherever they are, wherever human society is. This group of people will cause problems and they will cause issues. And Imam Hussein wanted to bring that out. And that group of people, really, my friends, that group of people that Imam Hussein wanted to expose, and Imam Ali could not, Imam Hassan could not, because of different reasons, that group was the people. Yes, that was the group. They have no name, they just go by the people. Yes. Everyone who becomes and says and wants to stand up for something, they say, the people are with me. If the people aren't with me, then why are they not saying anything against it? It is these people that Imam Hussein wanted to bring out and expose. And that is exactly what he did, my friends. If you look at it historically, if you look at it in our ideology and what happened in reality, you will see that of all the imams that came and of all the imams that became shaheed, Imam Hussein was the only one who was killed by the people. Imam Hussein was killed by the people. Imam Ali was killed by Ibn Muljim, right? Imam Hassan was killed by someone. Imam Hussein was killed by the people. The people came out to kill him. The people came out. Look at thousands of people. They came out. We want to kill Hussein. Imam Hussein wanted that. He wanted to expose that from now on, anyone who understands Karbala, who understands me, should never respect the people. Should never respect the people and anything that is based on the people. Anything that is based on the people, you say no. The people killed Imam Hussein. Why should we trust them? The people were the ones who threw stones on Hazrat Zainab. It wasn't one person throwing it. It was the people who were throwing it. It was the people who were jeering the caravan. It was the people who were doing that. And this is exactly what they want to bring out and say, you want to build your tyranny, your falsehood on the people, then I will expose the people in Karbala. And that's what Imam Hussein did. He exposed the people. Now, any system that is based on the people, Imam Hussein is saying, that system is anti-Ashura. If you believe in me, if you have understood me, then you will never accept a system that's based on the people. Because it's the people who killed Imam Hussein. It's the people who imprisoned the family of the Prophet. It's the people, this silent majority, that when they see wrong happening, they don't say anything against that wrong. When they see zulm happening, they don't stand up against it. These were the same people who, when Fatima was being tortured, they did not say anything. The same people. When the house of Fatima was being burned down, they watched it. They were sad. You know, they were grievous of this. It was bad. They felt it was bad, but they didn't say anything. They didn't do anything. These are the murderers of Imam Hussein. And now when we look at it, my friends, when we look at the life and the imamat of our fourth imam, now let us say, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. What was missing, really what was missing, was that one aspect that Allah has made for society. That aspect, that system that Allah made, that was completely ignored. That was completely ignored. It was given by Allah. In fact, Allah said that if this message is not given, then deen is incomplete. That's the message of Ghadir, right? What was Ghadir? What was the message of Ghadir? It was the wilayat of Ahlul Bayt. It was wilayat. And that was completely ignored. It was as if it did not even exist. Now understand this. A situation that when we look at the beginning of the imamat of our imam, when we look at it, it is historically a fact that no other imam found himself in such excruciating circumstances and such dismal circumstances than Imam Sajjad found himself in. Send a loud salawat for his blessing. I mean, you cannot really just imagine this. Where his imamat started? With the shahadat of his father, the raiding of the tents, the burning of the houses of the Prophet, the panic of the ladies and the children, and in the midst of all that, you see his imamat began. And now this imam, who had to deal with so many situations at one time. Imagine the work of the imam and his task that he had to undertake. On one hand, he needed to establish the wilayat of Ahlul Bayt. Speak out the truth, the message of Imam Hussein. Speak it out. Let it be known to people. On one hand, he had to say it. He had to openly declare it. In a situation, in a place where his life is in danger, they are captives, they are prisoners, and they're being taken. In spite of that, he has to speak out the truth. That's one task. At the same time that he has to speak out the truth, he has to make sure that he, in the process, doesn't get killed. Being the imam, he has to now see that he, being the imam, you see, now he has to protect himself, at the same time say the truth. He has to protect himself and carry on this message and do that which Allah has willed. Imagine that on the other hand. Then the third task is what Imam Hussein obligated him, which is also natural and logical. And according to our ideology, Imam Hussein instructed Ahlul Bayt. He gathered them before even they reached Karbala. He gathered them together, expressed to them exactly what will happen, how things will turn out. And then after expressing that to everyone, he gave them an advice. And he says, listen, when that happens, the one thing I want you all to make sure that you do is that you do not do anything to lower your respect and honor. It will be difficult to go through it without lowering respect. You know what that meant after Ashura? It meant that if we lose someone we love, you know how hard it is? People, any one of you who have lost loved ones before, you know that, how hard it is and how many days it takes for you to overcome it. And crying helps. Grieving helps. In fact, when a person doesn't cry, people are afraid. He's in a state of shock, right? And they want him to cry. He says, let it go. Let it, all come out. It will ease you. It will make you comfortable. You see, in that situation after Ashura, imagine this, that Imam Hussein is saying, do not do anything that will lower your respect and will give them the pleasure of seeing you weak. What that meant was, even though you will see us killed, you will see the shuhada lying on the battlefield, you will see the situation they're lying in, the horrible situation that they're lying in, but you should not cry. Hold it back. Do not give them the pleasure. Do not give them the pleasure. And that's why you see how hard was it for Imam Sajjad. At the same time, to make sure that he himself holds his respect and honor, and that Zainab, on the other hand, she also was told and she also maintained that respect and honor. And then to manage the children. Really, this is what you see in the training of Ahlul Bayt. Many places we find how even the children were so protective of their respect and honor that they would not lower themselves in spite of having extreme needs. They would never lower themselves. And here you see one of the examples is that when Sakina was offered, something as sadaqah, food as sadaqah, and she is hungry. She needs food and she's just a child. And a child, when they are hungry, they're not looking at who's giving, what's giving. They just take and eat. They're so extremely hungry. And in that state, when someone offered it and said, this is sadaqah, you are poor, he says, no, my aunt Zainab had said, inna sadaqata alayna haram. Sadaqah is haram for us. You see, my friends, this is training. This is the emphasis. Look at this. And to make this caravan go that far, this is what Imam Sajjad had to do. And he did that. And he made this message that was given in Karbala, he made it reach Sham. He made it reach there. And this message reached there. And these people that were there and what he was fighting, after the people were exposed, now for him is to now build these people. That's why whenever Imam Sajjad used to read a hadith, he would, in every hadith that you read of Imam Sajjad, he would say that my grandfather, the Prophet, said this, or my grandfather, Imam Ali, said this, or my father, Hussein, said this. Every place you see, he is referring to his grandfather, the Prophet, grandfather Ali. Why is he referring to that? So that he can establish that deen came from this line. That religion came from this line, so that people who have forgotten it, who have ignored it, they can now start paying attention that the line through which this deen came and this religion came is the line in which Muhammad Ali and Hassan and Hussein are in. This is Imam Sajjad, my friends. His task was not easy. And then when we see how he lived his life, every moment to raise this flag, to remember this remembrance, this memory of Karbala, so that the people will never forget it. Every place he goes, you see he's recounting the history. In fact, when we speak about the masaib of Imam Hussein, it was really Imam Sajjad who was the first zakir of Imam Hussein. Throughout, he was giving speeches, giving lectures, informing the people. And how was he informing? And explaining to them that this is what happened in Karbala. This is what happened in Karbala. Imam Hussein, what happened? This is what happened. He was telling it all through every place he saw people, he was saying it. Even though he was in chains and the woman's hands were in ropes. He was saying this, kept on saying this. Why was he saying this all the time? Because he knew that these people will try to change history and they will try to make this into a whole different thing than it was and give it their own spin. So that's why he was repeating this. So no one afterwards would ever come and dare to change what happened in Karbala, and so that the truth of Karbala can be established. This is how he established it, my friends. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for him, but he did it. And that's why we say, As-salamu alayka ya Zain al-Abideen. Really, you have not only given this message, but established it. It is said that after Karbala, he lived for 35 years. And he lived for 35 years in such a way that any time it is said in the books that whenever he used to see food, he will start to cry. Really, sometimes what memories are coming back to him? My friends, we only heard so much fraction of what happened in Karbala in books. Really. And the fraction that we have in the books, they are those people who are ready to criticize, oh, this really didn't happen and this really didn't happen. We only know fraction of that which happened in Karbala. If we had known what Imam Sajjad had known, really, my friends, really, you know, I mean, what was the musibat in Karbala? Know it through the tears of Imam Sajjad. Every time he used to see food coming, he would cry. Every time he used to see water given to him, he would cry so much that the tears from his eyes would add to the water in the glass. That's how much he would cry when he saw water that would come there. Every time he would see water. Imagine this, Imam Hussein, Imam Sajjad used to cry and mourn. How many years? 35 years. Sometimes his own servants who would be with him would try to stop him because they would think that, you know, he's hurting himself. One servant came to him and said, Mawla, you should not cry so much. You are going to kill yourself. You're going to hurt yourself. And you know what Imam Sajjad said? He said, Yaqub had misplaced one son. He knew he wasn't dead, but still he cried so much that he lost his eyesight and his eyes went white. How can you say that I am crying too much when I have seen 71 people in my household? Sorry, 17 people in my own household be trampled, be hurt, and be killed in the way that they have been in Karbala. How can you blame me? Really, my friends, what Imam Sajjad had gone through, it was very hard. It was very difficult. But you know, the one thing that Imam Sajjad throughout this remembered the most was his experience in Sham. Sham was very difficult for Imam Sajjad and the rest of the household, especially for Imam Sajjad. And as he himself had explained, when someone asked him, which is the place that you had the most, you saw the most harm, you saw the most hardship for yourself, and Imam Sajjad said, Asham, Asham, Asham. He said it three times, and he tried to emphasize that what happened there is different. And he asked, why in Sham all your people were killed in Karbala? He said, because Shahadat is our way of life. Shahadat is our inheritance. We are ready to die and we are willing to die for Allah. But going out in the bazaar, taking our woman out in the bazaar, this is not the way of the Prophet. This is not the way of Rasulullah. Rasulullah didn't teach us that. For Imam Sajjad to go through that, my friends, is very difficult. I mean, just imagine that being who's masoom, who's infallible, whose sajda, whose prostration before Allah is loved by Allah, who is known as Zainul Abidin and Sayyidul Sajideen, who has so much honor and shame in himself. That person, when he has to see his own woman, his own izzat and sharaf and respect and honor, which are his own woman of his household, those who he regards as mothers, those who he regards as sisters, when he sees them go out and people taunting them and listening and looking at them, can you imagine that? Those who have ghairat here, those who have honor here, you will understand this. If one of your women was outside and people saw it right away, you feel shame and you feel like, go inside, don't you see people are looking? You feel this jealousy, you feel this honor that overcomes you. And here you have Imam Sajjad, who's looking, who is taking Zainab bin Umm Kulsum, who's taking Sakina towards these places where people are looking and taunting. And you know how bad it was. There were times that it was so hard for Imam Sajjad that a person in Sham, when they entered the gate and they stopped there for a while, this person came and looked at Fatima Kubra, the sister of Imam Sajjad. He looked at her and said, I want to buy this as my slave girl. Imagine what Imam Sajjad, his heart was saying that, how can I stop this? This is Rasulullah's household. Can you imagine this, Imam Sajjad going through that? Now we see so many places where his heart was broken and people are saying things, cruel things to him, that they, when they say it, they don't know how much it's hurting Imam Sajjad. You know why it's hurting Imam Sajjad? Because you don't understand. These people didn't understand that if they just understood how much Imam Sajjad cared for them, how much he cared for them, if they just understood that, they wouldn't treat him like this. They wouldn't make him go through like this. When the caravan came to Sham, when it came to Sham, Yazid said, make this caravan go through a place called Jarun. Jarun was a place, it was a scenic place, a scenic route, where people used to go on vacation. When they used to go outside, they would go on vacation. And he himself had a vacation home there. He said, take him through there so I can see it. Before they even came to the court, Yazid saw them and he witnessed them with the rest of the spectators as they were being taken through that route. And they all were looking at them and he felt the pleasure of seeing them like this. But now when Imam Sajjad and Zainab came into the court and Yazid had to stand before them, now Imam Sajjad, he wasn't bowing down. Imam Sajjad now was talking and he was speaking the truth and he was letting them know. But then at the same time, it was hard for Imam Sajjad because Zainab and Umm Kulsum are with him. You know why it was hard? A person came to Imam Sajjad and said, you know what he said? He said that, I saw you come into the court of Kufa. I saw you come in the court of Kufa. And you know what? I was shocked to see you in the state that you were in. Because I had seen Muslim ibn Aqil come there also. And when Muslim ibn Aqil come there, he came in like a lion. He was brave. He was courageous. He would speak to Ibn Ziyad eye to eye. But when I saw you, your head was bowed down. Your head was bowed down. You weren't looking at him eye to eye. You were not speaking loud to him. I thought you would be more courageous than this. You are the Imam. What happened? Why were you like this? And then Imam said, you are not being fair with me. You're not being fair with me. When Muslim ibn Aqil came, he had no ladies who were standing in the corner without hijab. When I came, Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum are standing there. I didn't want to speak, say anything loud so that the people's attention turns towards them. بھائی اور بہنوں بس آخری دو لفظ کہتا ہوں میں تاکہ آپ یہ مصیبت کے آنسو روئیں اور اپنا پرسہ دیں. آج امام سجاد کی شہادت ہے, اب الوداع کہنے کا وقت آیا ہے, اب یہ تابوت اٹھنے والا ہے, اب اپنے امام کو آپ خداحافظی کیے. 35 سال امام نے حسین کے لیے اپنے عزیزوں کے لیے روتے روتے زندگی گزاری ہے, مگر میں کیا کہوں, کیسا کہوں, امام نے کیسی یہ زندگی گزاری ہے کہ جس وقت جب بھی کوئی قصاب کی دکان کے سامنے سے جاتے تھے تو قصاب شرماتے تھے کہ آئے سجاد آ رہے ہیں اپنی دکان بند کرے. کیونکہ آپ کو پتا ہے کیوں, کیونکہ اس وجہ سے کہ امام جب یہ گوشت دیکھتے تھے, جب یہ ذبیحہ جانور کو دیکھتے تھے تو رونا شروع کرتے تھے. قصاب عادی ہو چکے تھے اور پوچھتے تھے قصاب سے, کیا تم ذبح کرنے سے پہلے پانی پلائے ہیں؟ تو قصاب کہتا تھا, مولا میں آپ کے جد کے ماننے والا ہوں, ان کے دین پر چلنے والا ہوں, ہاں میں نے 3 بار پانی پلایا, اتنا پانی پلایا کہ جانور مڑ مڑ کے دیکھتا ہے, اپنا منہ پانی سے دور کرتا ہے. آئے امام سجاد مڑتے ہیں اور کہتے ہیں اپنے جد کو, یا رسول اللہ دیکھے یہ مسلمان جانور کو بھی پانی دے کے ذبح کرتے, ہائے میرے بابا جو کربلا میں تشنا پانی کے بغیر مارا گیا. امام سجاد روتے روتے, آج جب آخری وقت ان کا آیا تو وہ لیٹتے ہیں, زہر کا اثر ہو چکا ہے, ایک کپڑا لے کے اپنے منہ پہ ڈالتے ہیں, پھر اتارا کپڑے کو اور پھر آنکھ کھولی اور کھول کے بس اتنا کہا کہ دیکھو بس یہی اب میں جا رہا ہوں, اور یہ میرے بیٹے کو کہہ دینا. اب یہ کپڑا پہنتے ہیں اور آخری سانس لیتے ہیں. امام باقر آ کر ان کا آخری وقت جب دیکھتے ہیں کہتے ہیں انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون.
فاطمہ کے گھر سے یہ نکلا, یہ تابوت ہے. رو جنازہ فوج ملک ساتھ ہے, سر کھلے جبریل ہے. ہو گیا محشر بپا, آتا جنازہ یہ فاطمہ firdaus se nikli hai sar pe titi. Kehti hui ahle azam aata janaza hai shor hai mehshar bapa rote hai aale aba veera madi janaza hai sayyad sajjad ka aata janaza hai peeto sarhle aza aata janaza hai urao khak azadaro ke abid dafn hote hai urao khak azadaron ke dafn ho.